Morning, everyone. February 3rd, so Friday, gorgeous day out. Here we are, the Washington Fish and Wildlife Commission meeting again. Welcome to those in the audience. Glad to see you here. So, first item, always the call to order, and we start off with the commissioner's discussion. Who's done something notable they want to discuss, bring to the table? I know you all have, must have in the last few months or few weeks. Well, okay, I'll start off, and you can all think about what you want to say. I was over at the legislature yesterday meeting with various members of the Natural Resource Committees in the House and the Senate. Had a good conversation. They're always glad to see us reach out and ask them what they're interested in, what their concerns are, ask them if they had any messages to deliver to the commission. We ended up talking about, with Senator Morton, I talked with him about this Okanagan acquisition proposal that we will consider today. He had some concerns about it, and in particular, he brought up the need to figure out at some point in time how we are going to pay for the land management and operations that are necessary in order for us to be good neighbors, noxious weed control and that sort of thing. One of the big concerns in the county is that as we acquire more and more land, we're not carving out specific funding to pay for our land management obligations. So he had a proposal, he had a thought on that. He's already discussed it with Director Anderson. And it would be to create a fund, a dedicated fund of some sort. I told him that we have talked about this for years. And Chuck Perry brings it up like a broken record. Every meeting, every time we acquire some land, we talk about how we know we don't we don't add to the M&O budget. We just find it in existing budget, and that's not always very comfortable for us because we keep acquiring more and more land, stretching that budget thinner and thinner. So we acknowledge, I acknowledge to the senator that we see that as a big issue, and we'd love to work with him to find a source of money that's more consistent, reliable. And I had a meeting with Senator Hargrove. He had some thoughts on our Wolf position statement that we'll be talking about later. He hoped that we would consider how what kinds of limits we would put on the translocation tool in the toolkit. And I don't think the current draft takes that subject up at all. I also met with Representative Kretz and Representative Orchid, and they were concerned about wolves as well and our ability to do a good job in implementing our recovery plan and our obligations to manage conflicts. So it was a good set of meetings. I enjoyed the whole day. Commissioner Dubia?
Thanks, Madam Chair. We held a impromptu, I guess, meeting, I'd call it, in Colville approximately a week ago. And my hat's off to the director who went through mid-runway aborted takeoff and dashed through the hallways to catch the last flight to Spokane, drove through a significant snowstorm to get to the meeting for one day. So I don't think he can blame me on his throat problem today on that, but he probably still is scared or got some sensations from his venture that way. But we had set up a meeting with Nate Pamplin to come and talk with the wildlife community and county commissioners. And we had a really nice turnout, not only in quantity, but quality. We had the chairman of Ferry County Commissioners, and we had two of the Stevens County Commissioners, head of two of the cattlemen associations, and three of the advisor presidents from the local area up there, and about 70 people in total, 60-70. And as probably everybody is aware, we have probably a more impact from the wolf presence than most areas, and we had a lot of animosities and problems going forward with that. So we really did a great job of trying to communicate we do care, and the presence of the director and assistant director Nate at that meeting really went a long ways to show them that Olympia isn't ignoring them, and that they brought to us a significant amount of good information, a willingness to cooperate, maybe giving us a second chance. There's concern that we're falling behind on what we were going to do to keep up, and so they kind of came with us and gave us some good information, a new communication system for reporting conflict animals, not only wolves but cougars and bears, so that we can get better reporting. This is in the process of being set up. We'll start seeing monthly reports on those hopefully by next our next meeting. They communicated a new understanding that we picked up in terms of how sophisticated the cattlemen are in tracking the impact and what's happening to their herds relative to the arrival of wolves. It'll cause us to do some deeper thinking in terms of how we confirm and develop action plans relative to what's going on. We're so heavily timbered, the actual sighting is difficult. When you put the stock out there for 6 months in the mountains and come back 6 months later, if you're missing one, and they're covering 30,000, 50,000 acres, and it's all timbered, how do you find them? And if you do find them, was it a cougar or a coyote? What was the problem? If you can even find the carcass that's left. Here's a kind of a, we got to approach this maybe with some new sciences or some new technologies or new how we conclude confirmation that process. So we're going to try to work with them. They were an interesting point of view came out that we tried to talk about how we're trying to work to get compensation for their loss of stock, and did a good job of explaining our efforts in federal and state and department and come up with that. But it came out perfectly clear, in essence, they really don't care to get our money. It's important to them because some of them are losing enough that they could cause bankruptcy. But what they say, they look at those payments as that we're trying to buy them out of business. And they look at the wolf and the wilderness areas as approaches to stop cattle from grazing and force them out of business. So they're more interested in protection and what we can do to protect their livelihood and their business than they are getting compensation for loss of business. And so they're willing to be patient and work with us on the compensation side, but they're really concerned in making sure that we are doing everything possible on the protection side. And so that was a little bit new to me. I thought the monetary thing was far more important than what I walked away with from the meeting. But Nate and Phil did a really good job of neutralizing a pretty hostile negative, I guess not really hostile, it was more that they were there to express their disappointments and their concerns about us going forward. So we came out of that meeting extremely successful. Nate stayed over the following morning. Phil got out of Dodge before he had any more problems and headed back to Olympia for the next fight. But Nate stayed over, and we met with the county and went to the IT department to get the system set up. Met with some key people that are on the wildlife management side or groups that can help us. So it was overall probably one of the more productive meetings we've had in Caldwell. So Chuck Perry was in attendance as well as myself, and it was, like I said, one of the opportunities we had to take a situation, I think, and get us back on the right track. And it was really due to the director's presence and Nate's effort to stay there and work with everybody. So I thank him for that.
Great. Thank you. Anything else? Commissioner Caney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just really appreciate hearing Gary's report on that. I was hoping to go, but there was also a Selkirk elk herd management meeting in Okanagan that night. But I'd like to pitch in that, you know, in my job with Conservation Northwest, I've had a great opportunity to work with some of the ranchers in Caldwell on some issues and easements and different things. And hopefully we're going to be trying to do some pilot work with them and maybe help come up with some of those solutions that Gary talks about of preventing depredation rather than just paying the compensation. And some of the ideas can involve range riders and managing the herd, some different livestock management techniques that we're hearing about from ranchers in Idaho in wolf areas that use a low-stress livestock management that helps keep the animals more in a herd rather than spread out through the forest, yet they have to be managed and moved through the forest to get proper grazing use on the grass. And also some neat things, I think, coming out of Montana with some ranchers over there. Again, it's basin by basin as to what different people are doing to learn to live with wolves, but in the Blackfoot Challenge is a really good website to look up what's going on in Montana in one case. Really, the whole community has come together there to help the situation. Some of the things that they're doing are, for instance, two-day winter wolf track counts done by people on snowmobiles, skis, snowshoes, hikers, ranchers, hunters. And so you get a real clear picture at one point in time where animals are, so you have a better idea of how many packs truly are out there and how many animals truly are out there. And it becomes more of a community thing and not just laid on the backs of ranchers or hunters to take care of the wolf situation. So we're excited about that, and hopefully we're going to be putting together a workshop, might be in the Caldwell area, I'm not sure yet, and bring some of those ranchers in and just have some chance for them to talk to some of the folks here that are being affected.
Anything else? Okay, we can move to the next item, minute approval. We do not have any minutes to consider, so we can then move on to the director's report. Director Anderson.
Thank you, and good morning. Some of you have referenced my voice, so we'll see how I do here. I may have to turn the gain up, Tammy, we'll see. I have seven general topic areas that I was going to cover in the director's report this morning. And then Deputy Director Storr will do the legislative report and update the commission on what we know about our budget situation. The first item has two parts to it, and that has to do with permanent rules that have been adopted through the director's authority since we last met. And the first one that I wanted to call to your attention was the permanent rule that's associated with the pink shrimp trawl fishery. And I handed out a couple of photographs that give you a visual idea of what this rule is about. This rule was to reduce the maximum bar spacing on rigid grate excluders from 2 inches all the way down to 3/4 of an inch. It also would require fishing gear to remain on board until the shrimp are offloaded. It eliminates soft panel excluders. And finally, it eliminated the mesh size restriction in the intermediate portion of the cod end. The most important part of this rule, I guess I would say, is the reduction in the maximum bar spacing. Everybody is aware that Yulecon smelt are listed. Yulecon smelt have been a bycatch in the pink shrimp fishery, and the primary purpose of reducing the great mesh size is to reduce the incidence of Yulecon smelt being taken as bycatch in this pink shrimp trawl fishery and have them go through the excluder and escape without going into the cod end of the net. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife has conducted a study, and they found a 16% reduction in Yulecon bycatch when using this 3/4 inch excluder, and that was compared to a 1 inch excluder with essentially no loss in the quantity of shrimp that was taken in the trawl. So it seems to be an effective means of excluding Yulecon shrimp and the mortalities associated with that in the pink shrimp fishery, while at the same time still allowing the net to be effective in the retention of the targeted species. We did have, in terms of the way we communicated with the public, we had three different letters that went to industry starting back in March of 2011, followed up with a couple more in April and another one in December. And then we also held 5 public meetings with license holders, dealers, processors during that same time frame. We did make one modification to the rule before it was approved, and there were some concerns about having to leave the gear on board. Our response was that we amended the rule to allow the removal of gear from the vessel before the offloading of shrimp if the fisher notifies the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and we have a contact number for them to do so. So, good piece of work, Lorna Wargo, and working with Deputy Chief Sensi and others in Region 6 resulted in this. If you're interested, the delegation of this really isn't a delegation of authority. The authority for the director to adopt this type of a rule is found in 7765-220, where it specifically says the director may authorize. May by rule determine species of shellfish, the type of gear that's used, and so on and so forth. So, the second rule action I'm going to save till the last, in the spirit of saving the best for last. You'll know that was kind of a joke when I get to it. The second item is. Is short but important. The revisions that we made to our joint sturgeon management accord with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, handed a copy of that out to you. I provided a briefing, a memo to you by email following my discussions with my counterpart in Oregon, the director, Roy Elliker, where we reached an agreement to manage this year's fishery based on a 16% exploitation rate. We preserved the allocation between sectors and areas of the fishery with that one exception of the Willamette, where we have that little bit of flexibility if needed to get to a 4-day fishery, but with a ceiling on it. That's described in the accord that I provided you. I won't take any more time to go through any more of that detail. I think that was provided in my email, but if you do have any questions, I'd be happy to answer it. But I was pleased with our conversations and the outcome of that, and I think the commission taking a strong stand on the 16% put me in a good position to have a successful discussion with Oregon, and appreciate that. We'll go from fish to animals now, and a little bit of update on our work associated with preparing ourselves to successfully implement the Wolf Conservation and Management Plan. Couple of just items on any new information we have about the wolf's presence. Our wolf biologist Paul Frame was working in the Colville area and did confirm wolf activity in what the area known as the Wedge, consistent with field reports that we've been hearing. And another wolf pup was legally trapped in Idaho near the Washington border, possibly a member of the Diamond Pack. This does not alter the status of the Diamond Pack as being a successful breeding pair. Category of outreach, Commissioner Duvia talked about the meeting we had in Colville, and I can say without question that meeting would not have gone nearly as well if Commissioner Duvia had not been there and assisted with managing the discussion. Really appreciate that. I thought we all worked together really well as a team. And while there was, when we walked into the room, standing room only, but I thought we had a very productive discussion. We spent about 3.5 hours there with them and talked about some tough stuff. It was a good airing. It was a good chance to hear their perspectives and concerns. I learned quite a bit from listening to them, and hopefully they learned some things listening to us as well. We're going to go back. I also had a chance to spend a couple hours with another one of our biologists over there, Jay Shepherd. So it was a good experience for me, and it was a good opportunity. I also reached out to the Stevens County Cattlemen's Association, offered to come back over and talk with them. And I did get an email from their chairperson, and so we're going to try to set that up. Nate Steep Azangra, Dennis Beach met with the Colville tribes about developing a MOU on sharing of wolf data. Also implementing some similar field protocols and leverage resources for both on reservation as well as work on the north half. Commissioner Perry was also present at that meeting. That was our annual meeting that we have with the Colville tribe, and it was actually held the same day as our meeting with that we had up in Colville. Well, it was a two-day meeting, but anyway. I also sent an email out to the commissioners about some of the things that we're doing to organize ourselves in a manner and add some capacity to our abilities to successfully implement the plan, and I wanted to just touch on a couple of those briefly. As you saw in my email, the wolf management has shifted from our diversity, threatened, and endangered section over to the game and carnivore section. That will align with our work activities and expertise for large carnivores. It also allows for increased attention to other threatened and endangered species, recovery plan development, implementation, and status reviews. So now that we're in the implementation stage, that's why we chose to make that move. And as you know, we have a number of other species that need attention. Steve Pizangra will be the statewide policy lead and will lead our newly formed cross-program wolf implementation team. The team just met for the first time here a couple of days ago. Steve's experience with wildlife management, carnivore expertise, coupled with being based in Spokane, I think will ensure strong leadership close to the areas, major areas of immediate concern, and will have a direct link and coordinate with the carnivore section here in Olympia, as well as the regional wildlife and enforcement staff. And the enforcement staff members are an important part of our team. In addition to that, Yair Reitzma, who's our performance and accountability manager in the director's office, he's been, call it detailed, for a 3 or 4 month assignment to assist the implementation team with the development of a project management plan, outlining tasks, responsibilities, and completion dates. So we're happy to have Yair doing that. He's back there in the back of the room. We've also got our recruitment out for two wolf biologist positions. Those were announced on Tuesday, and not to be confused, one of those is taking a current project position, which is the position Paul Frame is in, and turning it into a permanent position, and then the other one is a new wolf bio 2 position. So those have just gone out. And were announced on Tuesday. I suspect it will take a month or so before we're in a position to make hiring decisions. We're also having had a recruitment go out yesterday for several what we're calling SciTech positions that will be support the activities of those two wolf biologists so that we can have some additional capacity for outreach, talking with landowners, livestock operators, helping with our communication with the communities, as well as getting out and helping with responding to individuals who are reporting, sighting wolves or expecting wolves that are in their area. So we essentially have 3 new positions there that are going to all be located at least for the foreseeable future in the eastern portion of the state. And so I think those additions are really going to help our capacity to respond and interact and communicate and help get callers on wolves where those opportunities present themselves, and also work with individuals that may are having problems with wolves in their area, helping them identify means to address that. So adding some significant capacity there. We also have internal training for wolf depredation response that's scheduled for mid-March.
Pardon us. Commissioner Duvia?
Are those SciTech positions, are they part-time, full-time?
They're full-time. Yeah, so the qualifications for those SciTech positions, while they have to be qualified individuals, they're not as stringent qualifications as they are for the biologist position. So it allows us to consider some individuals that may have some really good expertise in terms of tracking, but may not have the background to actually go and take the genetic samples and those kinds of things associated with actual the trapping and the collaring of the animals. So they're going to work hand in hand with those biologists. So again, this internal training for the wolf depredation response we've got scheduled for mid-March. The trainer is a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service employee. His name is Carter Niemeyer, who is a well-known in wolf management circles. The agenda is shaping up to be very productive training and a kickoff to our wolf implementation for biologists and enforcement officers. Depending on the size of the training facility and planned attendance by agency staff, invitations may also be sent out to the sheriff's office. They may want to send deputies to that training, as well as to individuals from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services, and perhaps the tribes may want to have someone come and attend that training as well. So We know that a lot of folks outside the agency have expressed an interest in attending, so we're looking to expand the training from 2 meetings in separate locations to 3. So it's, and I think to the extent that we can have individuals from different entities in the same room, receiving the same training, hearing the same thing, and interacting with one another, I think is really going to pay benefits. Locations for those are not set yet, but likely Spokane, Ellensburg, and maybe another a location in the Freda or Wenatchee area is kind of what we're looking at. So that's an overview on some of the steps that we're taking, some pretty, what I think are pretty aggressive steps to put us in a position to effectively implement the plan that the commission adopted in December.
I wanted to offer the suggestion that you outline that, develop a packet of information about that, and send it over to the legislators who are sponsoring the Wolf legislation. Make sure we get to the key legislators, because I asked Representative Kretz if he knew about the carnivore group that we had formed, and he said he was not familiar with that.
Yeah, I'll get over and talk.
Okay.
Representative Kretz.
Commissioner Jennings?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wanted to comment on the reorganization that has the carnivore group working, taking the lead on wolves now. I did get a few concern calls from conservation representatives about was this a coup and what was going on, and when I explained to them that no, that you had been very transparent with us about the reasons why, and that the commission as a whole felt comfortable with that realignment, looking at the fact that T&E folks had been dealing with the wolf question for the last 5 years, and they have a lot of other work they should be doing, and now that we're getting into the recovery and management phase, we're really looking at having the new plan be focused on managing on the landscape, not recovery. So after the conversation, they seemed much more comfortable with where we were going, and it was nice to hear that. So.
Oh, the one other thought I had was, as you were talking, I think it would be a good idea to bring Eyes in the Woods organization into the training at some point in time.
Okay.
And I thought maybe if we provided them with the basics of, maybe we need to hand out little plastic rulers and so that they can take pictures of tracks with rulers sitting next to it. And you know, but they're, from what I've seen, they're an excellent organization, very well organized. Just a thought.
Okay. Next item is, I wasn't able to join you at your January meeting. It was at the Washington, or the Western Association of Fish and Wildlife Agency meeting, but I understood that there was an interest to understand what the Puget Sound Hatchery Action Advisory Committee was all about. So I just have a little short description of that, and I'll, I've also got a handout here for you. So the Puget Sound Hatchery Action Advisory Committee, we created that in 2011 for the purpose of advising the department on potential modifications to the state's hatchery programs in Puget Sound. This includes assigning population designations and prioritizations of our hatchery reform actions to reduce risks posed from hatchery operations to wild fish. The committee also provides advice on strategies to balance conservation of the salmon resource while supporting sustainable fisheries. The committee began meeting in July. We began meeting pretty intensively twice a month through October, and then since November, the committee has shifted to meeting once a month. As a matter of fact, they were just meeting here yesterday. Work recommendations to date from the committee to the department include relative to Chinook salmon, wild salmon management zones and population designations. On the steelhead front, wild steelhead management zones and prioritization of hatchery programs that need risks quantified and calculated if they are to continue. Still working on coho, but with slated for completion for coho as well as pink chum and sockeye. We're looking for coho in February and then pink chum and sockeye in March. All of that group's current work products, including meeting agendas, minutes, recommendations, and working papers, can be found on our agency website. I've got a link here for you on this handout if you want to go take a look at that. And we wanted to put this group together to help and assist us in working with the tribal co-managers in developing new management plans for state hatcheries that are unique to each Puget Sound watershed. We've talked about developing a watershed-by-watershed management approach. The 11-member committee is guided by plans and policies adopted by the commission, including the statewide steelhead management plan and the hatchery and fishery reform policy. Also, we wanted to have the actions recommended by the committee support DFW as it moves forward in implementing the Fish and Wildlife Commission's policy in that regard, and also ensure that our hatchery programs are being operated in a manner that are consistent with the HSRG recommendations. Got some pretty well-known people on that group, Lee Blankenship and Frank Haw and others. I didn't bring a roster with me, but it's an impressive group of individuals that has bring some real expertise, understanding that we've got that hatchery reform and how we operate our hatcheries is a key component of wild fish recovery in Puget Sound. So that's what it's all about, and I've got a handout here I'll provide for you here at the break. The next item I'm not going to spend time speaking to, but I wanted to acknowledge Joe Shoren from the AG's office, the head of the Fish and Wildlife and Parks Division, who's really worked closely with me, and that is on the update of the delegation of authority document. And I have we've continued to work on that. I provided you some copies, drafts before, but I think we're feeling comfortable, or as comfortable as we can be, that we're at a point where we've put our best effort forward to provide you a document for consideration. I have both a clean copy as well as an underlined strikeout version that I'd like to leave with you. While I don't want to put undue pressure on you, it would be good to see if we could get a completion of this project sometime over the course of the next couple of meetings. So by maybe we could schedule a little bit of time in March to talk about it, and perhaps you'd be ready to take some action in April. But sorry. So I have that for you, and I'll get that handed out to you at the break. The next item is the director's performance agreement, and again, in association with my performance review in December. We talked about. I also provided a handout at that time, a draft about a performance agreement for the calendar year 2012. I've done some more work on that, and thanks to Joe and Yair for helping me on this. This is another one that, given that it's for the calendar year of 2012, it'd be good to try to get some closure on this. So I'm going to also provide you a handout of this. Let me just speak to it briefly, and maybe we could talk a little bit, maybe toward the end of the agenda tomorrow or something, in terms of next steps as to how we might reach closure on this. So the 2012 agreement, the draft agreement, I believe is responsive to the performance feedback that I received from the members of the commission at the executive session in November 2012. There were kind of four areas of emphasis. The first, an emphasis on ensuring that we have effective implementation of the Wolf Conservation Management Plan. It addresses that. There was also discussion about improving our outreach, communication, marketing, both with our traditional constituents as well as other interests, environmental groups, conservation groups, the public, the non-consumptive type of constituencies that we have that benefit and support the activities of the department. So that is captured in this. There was also some discussion about the effectiveness, the feeling of the worthiness of our advisory groups in our discussion. So you'll see that there is a piece that addresses that concern that I heard from you. And then the fourth piece had to do with the relationship with the tribes. We talked some about trying to see how we might enhance the relationship with the tribes from a commission perspective, and so that's addressed in this as well. It's also the document that I'm going to provide you also is integrated with our conservation initiative and principles that we're going to be providing you some additional information about that is really driving our strategic planning process. And relative to the goals, the strategic goals that we have revised two out of those four goals, that being goal 3 and 4, with the intent of a more equal focus on each goal to successfully implement the mission, that is to say, greater emphasis on external environment and internal organizational capacity. I also took and consolidated some of the pieces that were in the 2012 performance agreement and arranged them into categories. So I thought it fit together a little bit, was a little bit more readable, so that it was the executive conduct piece, the resource management expertise piece, and then the collaboration and communication competencies. I organize those things in that way that you'll see. So again, I'll provide you copies of this at the break. If we have an opportunity to talk a little bit more toward the end of the meeting tomorrow about how to move forward with this, would appreciate that.
Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, this is me not thinking rapidly on my feet earlier. I did want to bring up something from the commissioner discussion that your comment set off for me. I got the opportunity to go last Saturday to look at snow owls out at Damon Point. It was a really nice opportunity. I saw a total of 6, lots of other people out there. As we were driving out, we were talking about the fact that I hadn't bought my Discovery Pass yet. So we stopped at Ocean City State Park and bought Discovery Pass, got out there. But actually, where we park, and I think Damon Point is a wildlife management area. Is it a state park? I don't know.
I believe it's state park. But
I was just amazed at how many people were there and how it was not signed. Park, you have to have a Discovery Pass to park here. This is a great opportunity where we had a lot of non-consumptive users going out using our state lands. Discovery Pass was exactly what they needed to be having, and there was not even a visual display that said, you should have this, much less anybody asking, you know, where is yours? And so it seemed like a missed opportunity. But also it was really nice to see how many people were out there taking advantage of this eruptive year of snowy owls in Western Washington.
So just I have one more, two more pieces here. This one is just a category of other stuff. Civic Salmon Commission attended my first meeting as chair of the commission here a couple of weeks ago. We have our annual planning meeting for the upcoming season. Will be in Vancouver, BC. It starts a week from Monday. So that's went well. International Pacific Halibut Commission met up in Anchorage last week, set quotas for the 2012 season. quotas for Area 2A, which is everything south of the U.S. Canada border, were raised slightly from last year. So you can expect similar recreational fisheries from for halibut off Washington and Oregon that we had last year. They were reduced in some other areas, notably off the west coast of Vancouver Island. They went down a little bit. 2C, which is southeast Alaska, they also went up a touch. I'm going to have to stop. So, we have a lawsuit, the litigants prevailed against our catch-sharing plan, which is our individual quota program for the Pacific Council. That I've been working with NOAA Fisheries on in terms of the response. I can provide more detail to you about that later when I can talk. So I'm going to hand this off to Joe, and we'll do the legislative report and budget update.
Did we want to talk about the right permanent reg?
But I'm going to give my voice a break, and I'll come back and do it after the ledge report.
Okay. Deputy Director Storr.
Good morning, Commissioners. Ann Larson is over at a hearing right now on the hydraulic project approvals, and so I'm going to do my best to talk to you about what's been a pretty dynamic session so far for us. Remember, the session started on January 9th. The last day to consider bills in the House of Origin is Valentine's Day, February 14th. About that time, or shortly thereafter, we expect the February revenue forecast to come out. That'll be the last sort of influence on the budget discussion. What I'm hearing is we'll see some additional downturn in the $200-300 million sort of range, primarily driven by caseload. If you remember in the past, the two influences, of course, one is revenue collection from taxes into the general fund. The other is the obligations that the state has in corrections and medical and other education. So the caseload continues to put pressure on our ability to, you know, our spending needs and revenue. We expect to be a little bit shorter in the February forecast. Not a lot, but a little bit. So we'll see that. We'll see those numbers and see if my guess is accurate in the middle of this month. March 2nd is the last day to consider bills from the opposite house. And then if everything goes well, March 8th is the last day of the regular session. So far, very little discussion about budget. A lot of discussion about policy issues, and that's where we've been busy. There on the budget front, though, we have heard that Representative Hunter, who's a leader on the House side for budget issues, is considering a sweep of recreation accounts, ORV, NOVA, our boating facilities program accounts would be three potential impacts to us. What that would mean on the ground is loss of match for our, you know, ability to go after federal funds or other fund sources. We have historically received about $200,000 for NOVA. We use that for road repair, road maintenance on some of our wildlife areas, and up to $2.5 million for boating facilities programs in the past. So we're communicating those concerns to the representative and to other legislators about the impacts that might have on our matching ability to go after other fund sources. As far as agency request bills, as you remember, we had...
What's the amount of money we're talking about if they swept those funds clean?
I don't have that on.
Okay.
I don't know.
Significant amount of money? It doesn't sound like it.
I think it's in the tens to hundreds of thousands of dollars. So,
okay.
And I can get you some details. Agency request bills, we had two primary bills. The first is our enforcement omnibus bill. House Bill 2364, exec'd out of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee on Tuesday without any amendments. So it's moving along well in the House. It's also moving along well in the Senate. Senate Bill 6135, exec'd out of the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee on Thursday with a couple of amendments to it. It added unlawful feeding of carnivores, the cougar, bear, wolf piece that we've talked to you about before. It changed the unlawful possession of a loaded rifle in a motor vehicle to include upon a vehicle. That was a discussion we've had before. And created an exemption to distance requirements for orca whales to allow for cleanup and rescue. So if you have a sick whale or a dead whale, it allows you to go in close and take care of that. Our other agency request bill, the carnivore bill, Representative Blake sponsored House Bill 2365. That exec'd out of House Ag and Natural Resources on Tuesday with some amendments. Those include removing the condition that livestock operators must be commercial to receive compensation, so it's broader than just commercial. Raises the amount of the state wildlife account for compensation from $50,000 to $200,000. And lowers the criminal wildlife assessment penalty for killing a wolf from $4,000 to $1,000. In the Senate with the carnivore bill, Senator Rolfes exec'd the bill out on Thursday without any amendments. Now there's some discussion about another bill sponsored by Senator Schessler that had to do with affirmative defense to take a wolf. There's some discussion about rolling that into Senate Bill 6139. So the carnivore bill and wolves, there's a lot of interplay back and forth on those two issues. The two bills that had to do with apex predator designation that I think Ann spoke to you about before, neither made the deadline or moved out of committee, so those appear to be dead at this point in time. Moving on to the Discover Pass, a lot of activity early on about the Discover Pass. I think we had hearings, multiple hearings in the first week or two. In the House, all Discover Pass bills have been rolled into House Bill 2373, which Representative Vandaway has sponsored, and that's where Ann is right now. We expect those to exec out of the House committee on this morning. We did manage to get, with other folks' help, the vehicle access pass exemption included for our hunters and fishers. That wasn't in there originally. And there's a new exemption in there for campers on state lands. So we're trying to understand what that might mean in terms of revenue generation. On the Senate side, Senator Ranker's been a very strong leader in terms of working with us to improve the acceptability of the Discover Pass, and his transferability bill is being rolled into the House bill, so there's discussion about those two coming together, and seems to be a lot of momentum and progress to fix or improve the transferability to two vehicles in that effort. HPA, hydraulic project approval, you remember the number of years, depending on who you ask, it's 20 or 5 or 2, but improvement to the hydraulic project approval permitting process has been a very, very active discussion, and seems to be going with a lot of momentum this year. Senator Hargrove is the prime sponsor for Substitute Senate Bill 6406. It has three parts to it. Part one deals with HPA fees and some streamlining ideas. The fees that we would receive would be about $1.5 million, which is a little more than the governor had actually reduced in her budget proposal in terms of general fund reductions. So we would recover that, or that plus a little. That part one also has some streamlining authorization. A specific example has to do with our ability to work with local governments and do or create memorandum of agreements that would allow for more flexibility and less regulatory interface with local governments as they went on about their sort of routine business of bridge maintenance and road cleaning and those kinds of things. Part two of that bill goes back to the long-standing discussion with DNR and the forest industry about Forest Practice Act permits and hydraulic project approval permits. So part two would essentially do what we talked about last year. There are about nine different activities that currently require both a Forest Practices Act permit and a hydraulic approval permit. We would move final authorization over to DNR in part two of this bill, but have some concurrence ahead of time. So there'd be a review and concurrence process. DNR would then receive that from us in these nine different areas, and if we didn't agree, if they didn't agree, I mean, we would have the right to appeal ultimately like others do. So that's part two of the bill. There's also in that about $1 million in fees for DNR to carry out their Forest Practices Act activities. And then part three of the bill deals with SEPA streamlining, things like exemptions for the square footage of a facility or the size of a property or those kinds of things and SEPA. So a lot of energy, feels like a lot of momentum on the House side.
Commissioner Schmitten.
Thank you, Chair. A quick question on part two. It seems to be that you're merging the FPAs and HPAs together, putting them under the authority of DNR. Will we lose revenue that we would have collected had we managed the HPAs that are now going to DNR?
Well, potentially, and we've looked at that. I don't know the exact revenue number in the fiscal note, but Forest Practices applications, we issue about 4,500 permits across the state a year. Of those, about a tenth, 400 or so, are forest-related. These nine activities that are the lesser risk activities in terms of fish impacts, so there's some subset of that 400. So, Commissioner Schmitten, that may give you a sense of, you know, what that impact might be, but it's a relatively minor one compared to the overall size of the program.
The fee schedule that's in the bill right now for full cost recovery, the fees are structured such that even in with the integration of HPA and FPAs, there's the fee structure is such that it would give us full cost recovery. So.
Thanks, Director. So the House side, I'm sorry, Senate side moving along very well. House side, there's a hearing, I believe it's maybe today, it's a hearing coming soon. House Bill 2008, Representative Dunshee has a bill that includes parts one and two, so not part three, the SEPA streamlining. A major difference is in the House bill, there's full general fund recovery for the entire program. There's a $5.4 million anticipated collection of fees, and $5.4 million is the amount of general fund that's left for our HPA program. So there'll no doubt be some discussion about what the appropriate number is for fees and who pays them, et cetera. So. Very active, and I, you know, at this point, a lot of momentum on a pretty tough set of issues. Moving on, then, Senate Bill 6268, sponsored by Senator Swecker, looked at achieving efficiencies in stocking of trout to enhance recreational opportunities. It was heard in the Senate Environment Natural Resource Committee on Wednesday. It would require Fish and Wildlife to use 50% of all operating monies for trout on contracts with aquatic farmers. The bill is the initial step in privatization of trout production, and we spoke to a number of concerns that we had with the bill at the hearing. Our sense is the bill is not going to be moved out of committee, and we may end up in a study mode, perhaps with JLARC, to look at the, you know, what is the appropriate approach in terms of economics and efficiencies and offering, you know, the inadequate recreational opportunity here. So it seems like it's moving into a study phase versus taking this fairly dramatic step. Another bill, or another set of discussions that picked up some energy as a result of the governor's budget, where there was a $1.5 million hatchery cut. That generated a lot of discussion around the possibility of a coastal stamp or some other endorsement to fund coastal hatcheries. So we've been providing a lot of information and examples to legislators along the coast and stakeholders. There was a meeting on Wednesday and an agreement to hold off on legislation pending more involvement of stakeholders, and the governor's proposal for the $1.5 million shift actually from our transaction fee to hatcheries did not appear in the supplemental budget. So, you know, that's all still sort of out there, but we don't expect there to be legislation on a new coastal hatchery stamp this session at this point in time.
So where does that leave us with funding for those hatcheries that we had proposed to reduce? The governor initially said, no, we're going to shift it to that other wildlife mitigation account. And so
we have the governor's budget anticipated a 10% of $6.9 million reduction in general fund. What passed out of the legislature in the supplemental was basically just that management cut, about $1.1 million out of that 6.9, and the rest of those, there's three other areas, large areas, that are still pending the results of the regular session. So
okay,
to be determined. Mm-hmm. Interest of time, I've got a couple other smaller bills I'll just run through quickly. House Bill 2349, sponsored by Representative Kretz, has to do with beaver management. It removes a requirement that we have for establishment of management plans and establishes some reporting requirements. So it's intended to streamline and actually promote translocation of beavers versus just straight out trapping, as I understand it. So it was exempt from the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee on Tuesday, so that's still moving. There was a rock collection bill that Representative Bailey proposed that would have limited rock collection from state lands originally up to 250 pounds per day. We've been taken out of that, so there, you know, no rock collection would be allowed unless we passed a rule. The commission passed a rule, and only DNR is the focus of this bill now. So, House Bill 2650, Representative McCune, promotes state and private partnerships for managing hatcheries. That exec out from the House Ag and Natural Resources Committee on Tuesday with amendments that would allow partnering of non-state entities in hatchery management agreements. So it's similar to House Bill 1951 that passed a couple of years ago that opens up the door for discussions between the state and non-state entities about hatchery partnering. Representative Short, House Bill 2335, continues to be interested in looking at science policy and the use of peer review processes. That bill has moved out of committee to House Rules. It requires Department of Ecology and Fish and Wildlife to identify peer-reviewed literature, scientific literature, and other sources of information for taking significant agency actions. Still problematic for us. You know, what's a significant agency action? What does this do to process timing and decision-making authority, et cetera? So we continue to work with the prime sponsor and with Ecology to adjust the language. And two more. Senate Bill 6123, sponsored by Senator Hatfield. This is the National Rifle Association specialty plate, has moved to Senate rules. The special license plate sales, the proceeds from the plate would support firearm safety and education as part of our Hunter Ed program. And then finally, House Bill 2440, Representative Wilcox. And in the Senate, Senate Bill 6144, Senator Ranker, is a bill that we worked on with DNR to enhance the fire protection, fire suppression services that DNR could provide to us on our non-forested state lands, some of our range lands. So that's a positive thing. And that's moved all the way. It passed out of the House 96-0. So very positive thing. So that's, hope I covered what you're interested in and didn't embarrass Ann too much. So.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Anderson, you want to pick up the last item?
The last item falls under the category of needing your help to correct a mistake I made. We started through development of a rule, permanent rule change to WAC 220-69-240. And as you know, we implemented a catch sharing plan, and as part of the implementation of the catch sharing plan is the development of an electronic fish ticket system so that we can track individual quota pounds, quota pounds that are associated with quota shares. All that is not the problem. As part of the amendment to the rule, there's a couple of other items that were included. And it has to do with the sardine fishery and the anchovy fishery. And we currently have a limitation on the proportion of a sardine or anchovy delivery that can be used for purposes other than human consumption or bait. It's 15%. And this rule, to help us enforce that requirement, this rule extended that limitation to the purchaser. So not only is it pertains to the harvester, it pertains to the purchaser. We did, of course, went through the full rulemaking process, the 101, the 102, took public comment, had the rule hearing, and then I signed the rule about 5 days ago, and it was filed with the code reviser on January 26th. When I was preparing my director's report, the little light went on that I don't have the authority. I'm not delegated the authority to adopt the rule as it pertains to purchasing, and specifically with respect to anchovies. The delegation of authority language talks about harvest in the EEZ outside 3 miles, which all the sardines are harvested outside 3 because we're closed inside 3 for that fishery. And that delegation is also, there's an intent language to make sure that state rules are consistent with federal rules that are adopted pursuant to actions taken by the Pacific Fishery Management Council. So, worked with Joe Shoren last night and Lori Pruce and Deputy Chief Sensi. And so the request of you is to put on your agenda for this meeting, and I'm suggesting immediately following item 10, which is the agency WAC overhaul briefing, to put on that on your agenda consideration of amendments to WAC 220-69-240. If you agree to do that, then we will provide you with the briefing and a request to adopt the rule. And we've been working with the code reviser, and we have a mechanism by which to correct the portions of the rule that need your approval. So that's the request in response to my mistake.
Okay. Is there any objection to adding that to the agenda at the end of the day as requested? Looks like everyone is in support.
Thank you very much.
Okay. A little bit behind, but we've had a great conversation.